Ghosts in Solid Form, Gambia Bolton. Forward, as scientists in many parts of the world today are turning their serious attention to the question of the origin and their possible continuity of life, I feel that the time has now arrived when a textbook on the subject of the phenomena, known to investigators as materializations, should be issued to the public, in order to assist inquirers, both scientists and laymen, in their endeavor to solve these vitally important matters, as, in my opinion, it is by no means improbable that in materializations we may find the clue which will eventually enable us to solve the question, asked by each cradle, whence, and by each coffin, whither. This textbook contains, in plain and simple language, the results of a series of experiments carried out during a period of 7 years. With the exception of a few conducted by that master scientist Sir William Crookes, President of the Royal Society, London, and referred to in Chapter 3, to which mine were in the nature of a sequel, all were carried out in my presence, and the reports on these experiments have been collated from the official records kept by my three research societies in London. Contents Chapter Page, I Conditions, 1-2. Precautions Against Fraud, 15-3. Tests, 35-4. Questions Answered, 69. Appendix, 115. Chapter 1 Conditions. A single grain of solid fact is worth 10 tons of theory. The more I think of it, the more I find this conclusion impressed upon me, that the greatest thing a human soul ever does in this world is to see something and tell what it saw in a plain way. Hundreds of people can talk for one who can think, but thousands can think for one who can see. To see clearly is poetry, prophecy and religion all in one. John Ruskin. Working hypothesis that under certain known and reasonable conditions of temperature, light, etc., entities, existing in a sphere outside our own, have been demonstrated again and again to manifest themselves on Earth in temporary bodies materialized from an, at present, undiscovered source, through the agency of certain persons of both sexes, termed sensitives, and can be so demonstrated to any person who will provide the conditions proved to be necessary for such a demonstration. Looking back to the 7 years of my life which I devoted to a careful and critical investigation of the claim made, not only by both Occidental and Oriental mystics, but by well-known men of science like Sir William Crookes, Professor Alfred Russel Wallace, and others, that it was possible under certain clearly defined conditions to produce, apparently out of nothing, fully formed bodies, inhabited by, presumably, human entities from another sphere, the wonder of it still enthralls me. The apparent impossibility of so great an upheaval of such laws of nature as we are at present acquainted with, being proved clearly to be possible, will remain to the end as the wonder of wonders in a by no means uneventful life. For, as compared with this, that greatest of nature's mysteries, the procreation of a human infant, by either the normal or mechanical impregnation of an ovum, its months of fetal growth and development in the uterus, and its birth into the world in a helpless and enfeebled condition, amazing as they are to all physiological students, sinks into comparative insignificance when compared with the nearly instantaneous production of a fully developed human body, with all its organs functioning properly, a body inhabited temporarily by a thinking, reasoning entity, who can see, hear, taste, smell and touch, a body which can be handled, weighed, measured, and photographed. When these claims were first brought to my notice, I realized at once that I was face to face with a problem which would require the very closest investigation, and I then and there decided to give up work of all kinds, and to devote years, if necessary, to a critical examination of these claims, to investigate the matter calmly and dispassionately, and, in Sir John Herschel's memorable words, to stand or fall by the result of a direct appeal to facts in the first instance, and of strict logical deduction from them afterwards. And, as I have said, the result has been that the apparently impossible has been proved to be possible, and I accept them wholeheartedly, admitting that our working hypothesis has been proved beyond any possibility of doubt, and that these materialized entities can manifest themselves today to any person who will provide the conditions necessary for such a demonstration. Who they are, what they are, whence they come, and whither they go, Each investigator must determine for himself, but of their actual existence in a sphere just outside our own, there can no longer be any room for doubt. As a busy man, theories have little or no attraction for me. What I demand, and what other busy men and women demand, in an investigation of this kind is, that there should be a reasonable possibility of getting hold of facts, good solid facts which can be demonstrated as such, to any open-minded inquirer, otherwise it would be useless to commence such an investigation. And we have now got these facts, and can prove them on purely scientific lines. The meaning of the word materialization, so far at least as it concerns our investigation, I understand to be this: the taking on by an entity from a sphere outside our own, an entity representing a man, woman, or child, or even a beast or bird, of a temporary body built up from material drawn partially from the inhabitants of Earth, consolidated through the agency of certain persons of both sexes, termed sensitives, and molded by the entity into a semblance of the body which, it alleges, it inhabited during its existence on Earth. In other words, a materialization is the appearance of an entity in bodily, tangible form, that is one which we can touch, thus differing from an astralization, etherealization, or apparition, which is, of course, one which cannot be touched, although it may be clearly visible to anyone possessing only normal sight. Let me, then, endeavor to describe to the best of my ability, and in very simple language, how I believe these materializations to be produced, and the conditions which I have proved to be necessary in order that the finest results may be obtained. I will deal first with the question of is without conditions of some kind no materialization can be produced, any more than a scientific experiment, such as mixing various chemicals together, in order to produce a certain result, can be carried out successfully without proper conditions being provided by the experimenter. What, then, do we mean by this word conditions? Take a homely example. The baker mixes exactly the right quantities of flour, salt, and yeast with water, and then places the dough which he has made in an oven heated to just the right temperature, and produces a loaf of bread. Why? Because the conditions were good ones. Had he omitted the flour, the yeast, or the water, or had he used an oven over or underheated, he could not have produced an eatable loaf of bread, because the conditions made it impossible. This is what is meant by the terms, good conditions, bad conditions, breaking conditions. The conditions, then, under which I have been able to prove to many hundreds of inquirers that it is possible for materialized entities to appear on Earth, in solid tangible form, are these: first, light of suitable wavelength, that is suitable color, and let me say here, once and for all, that I have proved conclusively for myself that provided that one is experimenting with a sensitive who has been trained to sit always in the light, on two occasions I have witnessed materializations in daylight, and neither of Sir William Crookes' sensitives, D.P. Home or Florrie Cook, Mrs. Gorner, would ever sit in darkness. The latter, with whom I carried out a long series of experiments, invariably stipulating that a good light should be used during the whole time that the experiment lasted, as she was terrified at the mere thought of darkness. I find that sunlight, electric light, gas, colza oil, and paraffin are all apartment to check the production of the phenomena unless filtered through canary yellow, orange, or red linen or paper, just as they are filtered for photographic purposes, owing to the violent action of the actinic, blue, rays which they contain. The rays from the violet end of the spectrum, which are said to work at about 600 billions of vibrations per second. But if the light is filtered, in the way that I have described, the production of the phenomena will commence at once. The vibrations of the interfering rays being reduced, it is said, to about 400 billions per second or less. In dealing with materializations, we are apartment to overlook the fact that we are investigating forces or modes of energy far more delicate than electricity, for instance, heat, electricity, and light, as Sir William Crookes tells us, are all closely related. We know the awful power of heat and electricity, but only to apartment to forget, especially if it suits our purpose to do so, that light too has enormous dynamic potency, its vibrations being said to travel in space at the incredible speed of 12 million miles a minute one, and it is therefore only reasonable to assume that the power of these vibrations may be sufficient to interfere seriously with the more subtle forces, such as those which we are now investigating. 1/186,900 miles a second, J. Wallace Stewart, B.S.C. Secondly, we require suitable heat vibrations, and I find that those given off in a room either warmed or chilled to 63 degrees are the very best possible. Anything either much above this, or, more especially, much below this, tending to weaken the results and to check the phenomena. Thirdly, we require suitable musical vibrations, and, after carrying out a long series of experiments with musical instruments of all kinds, I find that the vibrations given off by the reed organ, termed harmonium or American organ, or by the concertina, are the most suitable. The peculiar quality of the vibrations given off by the reeds in these instruments proving to be the most suitable ones for use during the production of the phenomena, although on one or two occasions I have obtained good results without musical vibrations of any kind. But this is rare. Fourthly, we require the presence of a specially organized man or woman, termed one from whom it is alleged a portion of the matter used by the entity in the building up of its temporary body can be drawn, with but little chance of injury to their health. This point is one of vital importance, we are told, for it has been proved by means of a self-registering weighing machine on which he was seated, and to which he was securely fastened with an electrical apparatus secretly hidden beneath the seat, which would at once ring a bell in an anteroom if he endeavored to rise from his seat during the experiment, that the actual loss in weight to the sensitive, when a fully materialized entity was standing in our midst, was no less than 65 pounds. Before employing any person, then, as a sensitive for these delicate, not to say dangerous, experiments, he or she should be medically examined, in the interests of both the investigator and the sensitive, and should their health prove to be in any way below par, they should not be permitted to take part in the experiment until their health is fully restored. I have been permitted to examine the sensitive at the moment when an entity, clad in a fully formed temporary body, was walking amongst the experimenters, and the distorted features, the shriveled up limbs and contorted trunk of the sensitive at that moment proclaimed the danger connected with the production of this special form of phenomena far louder than any words of mine could do. Needless to say, sensitives for materializations are extremely rare, not more than two or three being found today amidst the teeming millions who inhabit the British Islands, although a few are to be found on the European continent, and several in North America, where the climatic conditions are said to be more favorable for the development of such persons. Now, what constitutes a sensitive, and why are they necessary? Sensitives through whom physical phenomena, including materializations, can be produced have been described, firstly, as persons in whom certain forces are stored up, either far in excess of the amount possessed by the normal man or woman, or else differing in quality from the forces stored up by the normal man or woman, and secondly, as persons who are able to attract from those in close proximity to them, provided that the conditions are favorable, still more of the force, which thus becomes centered in them for the time being. In other words, a sensitive or physical phenomena is said to be for the force which is used in the production of physical phenomena, including materializations, although it is by no means improbable that such highly developed sensitives as those required for this special purpose may be found to possess extra nerve centers as compared with those possessed by normal human beings. But whether this hypothesis be eventually proved or not, there seems to be but very little doubt that whatever the force may be which constitutes the difference between a sensitive and a non-sensitive, it is certainly of a mental or magnetic character, that is a combination of the subtle elements of mind and magnetism, and therefore of a psychological, and not of a purely physical character. But why is a sensitive necessary? You ask. Think of a telephone for a moment. You wish to communicate with a person who is holding only the end of the wire in his hand, the result being that he cannot hear a single word. Why is this? Because he has forgotten to fit a receiver at his end of the wire, a receiver in which the vibrations set up by your voice may be centralized, focused, a receiver which he can place to his ear, and in doing so will at once hear your voice distinctly, but without this your message to him is lost. And it is said that this is exactly the use of the sensitives during our experiments, for they act as receivers in which the forces employed in the production of the phenomena may be centralized, focused, their varying degrees of sensitiveness enabling them to be used by the entities in other spheres for the successful production of such phenomena, we are told. And lastly, we require about 12 to 16 earnest and really sympathetic men and women, persons trained on scientific lines for choice, all in the best of health, men and women who, whilst strictly on their guard against anything in the shape of fraud, are still so much in sympathy with the person who is acting as the sensitive that they are all the time sending out kindly thoughts towards him, for if, as has been said, thoughts are things, it is possible that hostile thoughts would be sufficient not only to enfeeble, but actually to check demonstrations of physical phenomena of all kinds in the presence of such specially organized, highly developed individuals as the sensitives through whom materializations can be produced. I shall refer to these men and women as the sitters. We generally select an equal number so far as sex is concerned, and in addition, we endeavor to obtain an equal number of persons possessing either positive or negative temperaments. In this way we form the sitters into a powerful human battery, the combined force given off by them, if the battery is properly arranged, and the individual members of that battery are in good health, proving of enormous assistance during our experiments. If in ill health, we find that a man or woman is useless to us, for we can no more expect to obtain the necessary power from such an individual, than we can expect to produce an electric spark from a discharged accumulator, or pick up needles with a demagnetized piece of steel. We are told to remember always that all manifestations of natural laws are the results of natural conditions. Minor details too, we find, must be thought out most carefully if we are to provide what we may term ideal conditions. The chairs should be made of wood throughout, those known as Austrian bentwood chairs, having perforated seats, being proved to be the best for the purpose. The sitters should bathe and then change their clothing, the ladies into white dresses, and the men into dark suits, 2 hours before the time fixed for the experiment, and should then at once partake of a light meal, meat and alcohol being strictly forbidden, so that the strain upon their constitutions during the experiment may not interfere with their health. Trivial as such matters must appear to the man in the street, we are told they must all be carried out most carefully, in order that the finest conditions possible may be obtained, the one great object of the sitters being to give off all the power, and the best kind of power, that they are capable of producing, in order that sufficient suitable material may be gathered together from the sensitive and themselves, with which a temporary body may be formed for the use of any entity wishing to materialize in their presence. Chapter 2 Precautions Against Fraud. Nothing is too wonderful to be true. Faraday. We are now ready to see what happens at a typical experimental meeting for these materializations, at hundreds of which I have assisted, and having the services of no less than 6 sensitives placed at my disposal for purpose. I will endeavor to describe it, I should consider to be an ideal one, held under ideal, test, conditions. Our imaginary test meeting is to be carried out, as it was on one occasion in London, in an entirely empty house, which none of us have ever entered before, a house which we will hire for this special event. By doing this we may feel sure that all possibility of fraud, so far as the use of secret trapdoors, large mirrors, and other undesirable things of that description are concerned, can be successfully thwarted. I would ask you to bear in mind that we are about to take part in a purely scientific experiment, and, whether I weary you with my descriptions or not, I intend to take just as elaborate precautions against trickery, so far as the room in which this imaginary meeting is to take place is concerned, as if I were at work getting a room ready for an actual test meeting, for I intend to leave no possible loophole for fraud, otherwise our time will be wasted. And I am going to take equally elaborate precautions to prevent trickery on the part of those attending this meeting, either as sitters or sensitive, treating one and all alike, However harsh this treatment may seem to be. But in a matter of such gravity I can trust no one, but must assume that every person attending the meeting is capable of assisting in the production of fraudulent phenomena, sitters and sensitive alike, and I shall take such preliminary precautions as will render trickery absolutely impossible by anyone present at this imaginary meeting. Harsh as it may seem, it is the only possible attitude for an open-minded investigator to assume in a matter of such vital importance as this, one which strikes down to the very roots of our existence as human beings, the origin and the possible continuity of life, to the very roots of our social and legal systems, to the very roots of our various religions. For we must bear in mind that, during this experiment, we are to deal with a certain alleged fact, the possibility of entities from another sphere returning to Earth in visible, tangible bodies, reasoning, thinking entities who are able to tell us of their life in other spheres, who proclaim the falsity of much that we regard as sacred, and we must therefore demand the most stringent tests that human ingenuity can devise, in order that we may be able to prove the truth or the falsity of the alleged fact. No other course is possible, in my opinion, for the investigator who is entering for the first time upon this little-known field of research. 1. See Chapter 4, 1. Such vast numbers of persons, such incredible numbers, attended the experimental meetings which I instituted in London for the examination of this alleged fact, persons from all parts of Great Britain, all parts of Europe, Canada, and the Americas, from far off Japan, China, Burma, India, Africa, Australia, and other portions of the world, persons in all stations of life, from those closely and intimately connected with the royal family, members of the royal household, distinguished soldiers like Field Marshal, Lord Wolseley, General Carrington, General Sir Alfred Turner, General Gordon and Colonel Valentine Gordon, both relatives of the great General Gordon, and numerous other officers of the highest rank, distinguished sailors like my friend Vice Admiral Usbourne Moore, a painstaking and highly critical investigator, who witnessed his first materializations at these meetings, one great physicians from Harley Street, London, and elsewhere, including the distinguished head of the Army Medical Department, Surgeon General Fawcett, members of the diplomatic services from nearly every civilized nation on Earth, officials from the Treasury, the Foreign Office, the India Office, the Colonial Office, and the War Office, members of the House of Lords, members of the House of Commons, of all the many known shades of political opinion, great journalists like W.T. Stead, and many others from different parts of the world, great writers like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, John Oliver Hobbes, Mrs. Craigie, Florence Marryat, and many others, great scientists like Signor Marconi, celebrated ecclesiastics of almost every degree, and holding innumerable creeds and dogmas, some of them carefully disguised as laymen, and passing under assumed names, well-known actors and actresses, well-known musicians, singers, artists, and architects, men and women of all kinds, each in his or her own way what the world terms celebrities, with many hundreds of others who make no claim to that title. Such an incredible number of persons attended our experimental meetings in London that it is quite possible that out of that vast number you yourself may have attended one or more of them, and may be thinking that at the meetings to which you were admitted the conditions were not nearly so elaborately thought out, the tests were not nearly so stringent, as those which I am about to impose upon the sitters and the sensitive at the imaginary one in which we are now about to take part. One author of Glimpses of an Unseen State. That is quite possible, for at the ordinary experimental meetings held by my three societies, the conditions imposed were widely different to those insisted upon at our test meetings, such as those held with Florey Cook, Mrs. Corner, which were strictly confined not only to members, but to specially selected members. I would ask you to remember too that I am not describing the conditions imposed or the results obtained at any particular meeting at which I was present, but rather the conditions which I consider should be provided, and the precautions against trickery which I consider ought to be taken in a really scientifically carried out experiment for materializations. Having all met together at an appointed hour in the hall of the empty house which we have hired for the night, All, that is, with the exception of the sensitive, who is not permitted to enter the house until half an hour later, it is put to the vote as to which room shall be used for this meeting, and as soon as that is settled, we all walk up to, and into, it together, and find ourselves in a large and lofty room on the second floor absolutely empty. Looking out of the window we see that there is a sheer drop of, say, 50 feet to the street below, and, as there are no houses anywhere in its immediate proximity, we are satisfied that it is altogether impossible for any person to either enter or leave the room by the window. Turning our attention to the room itself, we see that there are four bare walls, with a gas bracket fitted into one of them, a ceiling, a fireplace, and a solid floor. These must be critically examined first by an expert, and next the means of entrance to and exit from the room, the door, windows, and fireplace. I have purposely included amongst the sitters a well-known London doctor, an equally well-known London architect, both extremely skeptical, as they actually were at one time, as to the possibility of obtaining results unless fraud was introduced, and also two persons who have developed to a high degree their powers of second sight, clairvoyance or clear seeing, and shall make great use of them all during the meeting, as I frequently did when experimenting in London. We hand the key of the room to you, and all, with the exception of the architect and yourself, then leave the room, it being your duty to watch the architect carefully whilst he carries out a critical professional examination of the empty room. He will then draw up a report, which you will both sign, saying that in your opinion the room is not prepared in any way, but is in a perfectly normal state. You then unlock the door and hand out the signed report, and we at once pass into you 17 chairs, a large photographic lamp, with a piece of India rubber tubing, for you to attach from the lamp to the gas bracket as fitted in the wall of the room, a strong wooden cover which fits tightly into the fireplace, with long screws and a screwdriver to enable you to fasten it securely in position, a piece of dark-colored cloth or baize for you to nail up over the window, with a hammer and nails, so as to exclude all actinic light, and we push in a small harmonium and a music stool. Directly these are handed to you, you lock the door, and the architect joins with you in a close examination of each article, and when you are both satisfied that none of the articles are prepared in any way, you draw up a second report, which you both sign, stating that nothing whatever is, or can possibly be, concealed in them. You then both come out of the room, locking the door behind you and keeping the key in your possession. Having thus dealt with the room, and every article inside the room in which our experiment is to be conducted, we now proceed to deal with each person who intends to be present during the experiment, the doctor, the architect, you yourself, and I myself, with the remainder of the sitters, men and women alike, one and all being treated in exactly the same way, however harsh it may seem, for in a matter of such importance as this we can trust no one. The doctor takes each sitter alone into an adjoining room. Every article of clothing is removed in each case and the doctor then makes a careful examination to see that the person has nothing in his or her possession concealed about their bodies, or in their clothing, which could be used in assisting to produce fraudulent phenomena. At the conclusion of this searching examination, the sitter is permitted to dress, and you then show him, or her, into the empty room, you yourself unlocking the door to admit them and locking it after them. The sensitive now arrives at the house, and is met by the doctor, who takes him into the adjoining room and at once carries out a searching examination of the sensitive's body. His clothes are taken away from him, and, at the conclusion of the search, he is lent a complete outfit for the evening, in case he should have secret pockets in his own clothing. If the sensitive is a woman, she is treated in exactly the same way, and, after her clothing has been taken away from her, she is lent, not only a black dress, but a complete set of black underclothing for use during the experiment, even her white pocket handkerchief being taken from her before she enters the room, so that she cannot possibly masquerade as an entity clad in white draperies. When the search is over, and the change of clothing has been completed, you unlock the door, and the sensitive is admitted to the room for the first time. All are now in the room with the exception of the doctor, and it is then put to the vote as to who shall pass out and carefully examine the doctor, and only this sitter is permitted to go out of the room.